Penguin Random House Audio presents When I'm Her by Sarah Zachrich Jang. Read for you by Jesse Walensky and Louisa Zhu. First F. I think I could turn into you if I really tried. Persona. Author's note. Content warning. This book deals with emotionally difficult topics, including physical violence, gun violence, sexual assault, domestic violence, gaslighting, and drug use. Any listeners who believe that such content may upset them or trigger traumatic memories are encouraged to consider their emotional well-being when deciding whether to continue listening.
Halloween, 7 years ago. The rain falls in cold needles. It smears the girls' makeup, plasters their cheap polyester dresses to their backs. It makes a dull roar on the rooftop of the house from which they run. Despite their shivering, they don't turn back for shelter. The shorter of the pair, in black, hugs herself as she races up the sidewalk. Her head is bowed, hair pasted to her cheeks with rain. Neither rain nor hair can hide her tears. The taller girl, in a white slip dress that is quickly becoming see-through, trots to catch up. She left her shoes behind in the flight from the party, and the pavement is cold under her feet. The remains of a flower crown hang askew in her long red hair. Her cheeks shimmer with fugitive bits of glitter in the glare from a street lamp.
E, wait up! She calls.
The girl in black stumbles to a halt. In appearance, she is her friend's opposite, a head shorter, blunt-cut hair a dirty blonde instead of rich auburn, petite where the other is statuesque, sharp-faced instead of serene. Yet there is a thread between them, a resemblance that runs beneath any conscious comparison. The redhead sets a hand between her friend's shoulder blades.
He's dead, the blonde spits, as if being touched knocks the words loose.
Was he?
Pretty sure.
Both girls flinch as a gaggle of partiers runs past, laughing madly, their costumes drenched.
I feel like I'm going to throw up.
No one saw, the redhead says. We got out before anyone saw us.
She curls her arm around the other young woman's shoulders. They could be any pair of girlfriends, comforting and being comforted after one of the usual disasters that happen at parties. They are not. The redhead's name is Elizabeth, but it is not Elizabeth who looks through her wide blue eyes. Girls become one another all the time when they're close enough. They copy clothes and hairstyles, pick up one another's mannerisms and turns of phrase, riff back and forth in long message threads until it's as though their thoughts originate from a combined brain. These two, Elizabeth and Mary, have simply taken it a step further. Tonight, Elizabeth is in Mary's body, and Mary is in Elizabeth's. It's not the first time they've done this, or the 50th, but for Mary, every time is new and thrilling. After a moment, she says,
We should go home. We need to get back.
The blonde barks out a laugh through her tears.
Are you sure you want to come back, Mary?
She glances up, mascara-smudged eyes catching her friend's. Mary freezes. Is the truth that obvious? It's always been just for fun, this thing they do. But she feels more at home in Elizabeth's body than in her own. She's only ever wanted to be Elizabeth, the tall, gorgeous, rose-gold one, the one everybody wants. Things got out of hand tonight. What if Elizabeth decides being Mary isn't fun anymore? Mary shakes the thought away. She can't start spiraling now. She has to make sure they both get out of this.
It'll be okay. She says,
to herself as much as to her friend.
I know.
Elizabeth has stopped crying, only a slight tremble in her voice betraying any upset. Her expression is calm. It's uncanny how Mary can discern Elizabeth's innate confidence, a quality she has always envied, behind her own fox-like features. Unless the calm is really shock, and Elizabeth will fall apart once they're safe in the dorm. She certainly doesn't look sad, but then, it's not as if either of them will miss Garrett. Mary wonders if anyone will. The blip of a siren a block away makes them jump. Blue and red lights dance between the houses. The police are arriving, and the ambulance, just in case it isn't too late. Elizabeth is the first to move, putting distance between herself and the mess they've left behind. Mary follows. Relief flows through her, cool and sweet, at the thought that Elizabeth is back in control, that Mary doesn't have to be the one to fix this. More than that, tonight can't be the last time. She can't stand the thought of going through life without ever being Elizabeth again.
1. Mary. Now. I've just left my apartment, the cold hitting me like a snowball to the face, when Detective Johns appears. I was never charged in connection with what happened that Halloween, but attempted murder doesn't have a statute of limitations. It kills me that I didn't see this coming. As a child, I hated when my parents said to go play in the snow, because unsupervised time with other children never went well for me. It was only a matter of time until someone, often my brother, 2 years older, and big enough that I could have fit stacked inside him like a Matryoshka doll, would hold me down and force a handful of snow down my collar. John's attack is just as sudden, if more subtle. When he falls into step with me, I'm so startled, my worn boots slide out from under me on the icy sidewalk. He grabs my elbow.
Watch yourself now. Those slips and falls can really mess you up.
Did he just wink? I jerk my arm from his grasp, too rattled to pretend I don't recognize him.
Good to see you, Mary,
he says.
It's been a while.
7 years. Anthony Johns was the lead detective, a bald black man with hunched shoulders who spoke in a deep, soothing voice. His voice is still soothing. His presence outside my building, not so much. He smiles slightly. In contrast to my mismatched layers, his only outerwear is a black topcoat, unbuttoned to reveal the badge clipped to his belt. No hat shelters the shiny dome of his head from the cutting wind, yet he seems perfectly comfortable. Maybe the prospect of a new break in an old case is what warms him. What do you want? I say.
Every bit as direct as I remember.
His tone is fond, as if he never told me I had nothing to gain by being a bitch.
Are you aware Garrett Deegan died a few months back?
Of an overdose. The news made the rounds through Elizabeth's social media circles. People acting their asses off about what a great guy Garrett had been. How much they would miss him. How they'd had no idea of the demons he was battling. Please. The only battles Garrett ever fought were against people with a fraction of his power. In my opinion, he lived a lot longer than he should have. I don't say that to Johns, because I'm not stupid. Garrett's parents placed the blame for his near death and subsequent decline into addiction squarely on me. They are rich and powerful, so this makes life difficult. I'm not looking to make it unbearable. Johns taps his chin.
Did you know illicit drug deaths are treated as homicides?
He plainly does not expect an answer.
Part of my investigation consists of just talking to people who knew the victim.
The victim? Just talking my ass. I haven't spoken to Garrett in years. I wasn't allowed to speak to him even if I'd wanted to. John's voice sharpens.
But you know how he died.
My mouth opens. To say what, I don't know. That I saw it on the internet, but Garrett wasn't the one I was spying on?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?